Splinters of Jade grapples with mature and sensitive topics, which could be triggering for some listeners. There may be scenes ranging from the use of drugs or alcohol, suicide, enforced marriages, to violence, body horror, gore, and the dehumanization of certain castes, classes, or nations of people. Please see the show notes for episode details. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Splinters of Jade's Halloween Special, starring Buell Richardson as Togashi Jun, Brittany Thorson as Ayuchi Gami, and Corn Garvey as Ayuchi Shima, all narrated by Chris Garvey.
Rain is pouring down, and thunder and lightning are crashing all about. We see through the heavy rain a figure of a monk walking through the plains, approaching a small building with one room well lit. He opens the door to reveal a single room and two shrine maidens sitting there. They look at him and say in unison,
Hello, monk.
Hello, maidens. Could you tell me, what shrine is this?
This is the shrine to Nu,
Yokai of Storms.
Ah, thus the storm cast outside. Is there anyone else here but us?
It is just us, monk.
We are the only ones who tend to this shrine.
So it kind of gets lonely, I believe. Do you get many visitors?
Not many.
You are the first in a long time.
The last was a group led by a man with blue skin.
May I stay the night, for the storm is become very violent.
Certainly you may stay the night.
We are going to play a game.
Will you play with us?
What game would you have us play?
A game of 100 candles.
But I am just a humble monk. Normally 100 candles is played by the samurai.
And we are but humble shrine maidens.
This is an auspicious night to play this game, and it is a wonderful way to pass the time.
Very well. I will play with you, fair maidens.
Down this dark hallway
is a room with 100 lit candles before a polished mirror. We will tell our stories here.
The storyteller will then travel to the room of candles.
Therein, one candle shall be extinguished.
You will then return to this room for another story.
We will continue until all the candles have been put out, or one of us does not return.
The three of them sit down together and one by one tell their stories to pass the night. The only light coming from down the hallway ever fading until the last three candles remain.
In a small village off the main trade route spread rumors of a hidden room inside the inn. When the nights were supposed to be still, scratching could be heard through the halls. It would begin at one end and move to the other. Most guests were tucked away when it would travel through, Those who did not hear it most often shrugged it off as a fox or other small creature. For the few who didn't believe it was natural would question the innkeeper's wife in the morning. She would only smile brightly and tell them that as long as they remained in their rooms, there was nothing to fear. No one questioned the wife a second time. Late into the night, a young member of the Lion Clan, Matsu Tamahiro, banged on the door of the inn. He had traveled far and was desperate for a place to rest before his return trip to the capital. Quietly, the innkeeper's wife escorted him to the last remaining room. He thanked her before settling in for the night. A few hours later, the scratching began. Tamahiro lifted himself. He closed his eyes as he focused on the sound. It didn't move as an animal would. The scratching was slow, as if something heavy was being dragged across the wooden floors. In darkness, he waited for the noise to pass his room. He could feel his heart beat as the noise paused in front of his door. It shifted, then vanished. Shaken but warm from his long journey, Matsu laid himself back down. Sleep took hold. As with all the others, the innkeeper's wife laughed as Tamahiro explained the noise to her. Tamahiro couldn't let it rest. He paused his travels and remained at the inn for another night. This time he held vigil with his sword resting against his chest. A small unlit candle sat at his side along with a fresh match. If it came again, he would be ready. In the dead of night, the scratching came once more. Tamahiro lit the small candle and placed it in the hall near the door. It was only bright enough to illuminate a small area. It would be enough to cut down whatever was haunting the inn. Tucked out of sight, Tamahiro waited for the noise to approach. Just as the night before, it paused outside his room. The shadow showed the outline of someone draped in cloth. The image only lasted a moment before the candle went out. The door to his room opened. With a readied blade, Tamahiro shouted for the creature to show themselves. The shadow's movement was jagged. As it stared at him, he fell to the floor. Terror pooled in him, unlike anything he had felt before.
Tamahiro?
The shadow beckoned. Despite his fears, he found himself crawling toward it. Its hand was gentle and soft as it clasped onto his chin. He stared into the darkness, unable to turn away. With little force, it pulled him to his feet. He found himself slightly taller than the shadow. The fear in him began to wane as he regained some control of his body. He reached in to find himself touching the cheek of a young woman. "What is your name?" he asked, as if she were real. She did not answer him. To his disappointment, she vanished. Determined to find out the origin of the young woman, Tamahiro searched the inn. Nothing was found out of place. No one answered any of his inquiries. In frustration and desperation, Tamahiro remained in one final night. As any other night, the scratching began as soon as the night settled. Tamahiro did not wait in his room. He slowly moved out and faced the long hallway. The scratching continued forward until the shadow turned the corner to face him. With each of its jagged movements, it scratched at the floor. It met Tamahiro and enveloped him in its darkness. He pawed through it to find the woman from the previous night. No matter how much he grabbed, his hands fell on nothing. It pushed forward, pressing him against the wall until they broke through. The force caused Tamahiro to stumble back as he worked to regain his footing. He felt something on the ground. Without even moonlight to aid him, he moved his hands around. When he came upon it, he shuddered. His fingers traced the cracks and bumps. His thumbs slipped into the eye sockets. From behind him, he could hear the woman's voice.
Tamahiro, sleep with me.
One last time, the shadow surrounded him. He could feel as the air was being sucked from him, leaving him unable to scream. His skin was being pulled away. The muscle underneath was parted as the shadow feasted on the warm and tender innards of his torso. His final realization was the moment the shadow's teeth gripped into his heart.
Yuichi Gini returns and kneels back down.
Komai staggered onward. The soft ground pulled at his feet. Somewhere in the haze, he'd lost his tabi. Compared to the things writhing beneath his skin, losing his footwear was less than inconvenience. The fog in his head had only begun to lessen the day before. He no longer knew how long he'd been wandering this place. Had it been days, weeks, months? This far in, even Amaratsu's light failed to penetrate, leaving little distinction between night and day. He still possessed some clear memories from before the miasma set in. Komai remembered crawling inside Oni's corpse, scared beyond any sense of honor by the battle raging around him. He was barely able to fathom the suggestions from the thing he thought for years was his grandfather's spirit. He knew better now. Whatever dark thing had been impersonating his ancestor for all those years has saved his life, but cost him his soul. Maybe his mind as well. The true terror set in once Komai was inside the dead Oni. The monster carried some kind of parasite that began to burrow into his flesh. They tunneled into his body, writhing between muscle and bone, squirming under the skin. He wasn't sure how long he screamed, entombed within a coffin of dead flesh, with things worming through his body. They were only seeking a new host, but he didn't know that. They were still inside him now, moving around. Sometimes they spoke to him when they crawled through his head. He'd screamed himself unconscious. When he awoke, still inside the corpse, something was dragging at it. For hours, Komai waited, feeling his prison pulled over uneven ground while the things inside his body drove him mad. Somehow he stayed quiet. Eventually, it stopped moving. Later, he'd heard a chorus of whispers telling him the way was clear. Taking the advice, Komai pulled himself out and ran through putrid bogs of fields of bleeding grass, over clearings covered in bleached bones, through the forests of screaming trees. He ran. When finally slowed, his lungs burned like the fire dragon and crawled inside his legs, swayed in exhaustion. Delirious with fatigue and driven by fear, he staggered on. At some point, things started to become hazy. Something was drawing him further in. As Komai wandered the haze and grew stronger, most of what else he could recall was vague. Disjointed memories and images flitted through his mind. There were strange recollections of arms growing from his back and sides, then randomly falling off. One particularly vivid memory had his body locked rigid, vomiting more than his belly could ever hold. But what poured from his mouth in heaving waves was a torrent of eyes. And he was convinced they were watching him as they spilled in great mounds upon the ground. At other times, Komai would swear he'd been baying at the sky like a feral dog. Another memory had him down on all fours, face deep in carcass. No, not on all fours. He had at least 6 limbs at the time, possibly more. He remembered his facial hair falling out, teeth growing back in its place, and then the teeth falling out too. Worse were the scattered memories of the conversations. Some were the things crawling through him. Those weren't so bad. The ones with Tomori, those were bad. That was what it called itself once its mouth finished forming. The head grew from the right side, and it taunted him as it formed. It often told Komai it was going to take over. Sometimes it threatened to kill him, and it bit any part of him that came within reach. As hazy as those memories were, he remembered feeling relief when it finally fell away. Now Komai's mind was almost clear. He somehow knew his body had stopped changing. His skin had thickened, and some of his bones were no longer the same, but everything worked the way it should. Kamai even found himself growing stronger. Even the things inside were merely distracting now. As his mind continued to clear, Kamai stepped out into the clearing. The sky above rolled with pitch black clouds, and green lightning streaked about in flashes. Blood seeped up from the soft ground as it sloped down, growing steeper until it fell away into a bottomless pit. Howls of agony called out to Kamai from deep within the pit, like a chorus he found strangely melodic. All around were welcoming faces, many of only bone, while others bore horns and fangs. Beckoning him closer, one of his new skeletal friends led him to the edge of the pit. Confusion swept through Kromai's mind as he looked down into the abyss. He saw the obsidian knife but felt no pain as his host sliced it across his neck. As black blood was poured from the gash, warmth flowed through his body, and all suddenly felt right with the world.
Uchishini returns. There is but one candle left alight. As Togashi Jun tells his story.
Grandfather, what have you gotten me into? Chomai pondered aloud. For years, his grandfather's spirit hounded him to volunteer for the 20 Gullwing Winter. In life, grandfather had tried and failed. But, unable to rest, he hadn't given up aspirations for his family. His grandfather had given up on the boy's father. That man would rather lie in the arms of peasants than embrace his heritage. Raged the spirit. He was so lost, he couldn't hear his own father's spirit, but his grandson could. For 3 years, his grandfather's spirit had guided and encouraged him. That was how Chomai ended up here, about to die, covered in the stink of fear sweat and the blood of comrades. To say things had gone badly would be an understatement. Oni swarmed around Chomai's band of volunteers. They had too many limbs, the wrong number of eyes, and claws and fangs in places that should never have claws and fangs. The things reeked like a Hainan's backside and made otherworldly sounds that defied description. Chomai barely had time to register what was happening before he was half blinded by something spraying him. He heard Gusai's scream. It was agonized and short. The stink of copper and shit hit Chomai's nose as pieces of his friend flew through what little vision he retained. Gusai's head and one of his arms were still attached. That was the largest part he'd been able to make out. The creature remained unseen. There weren't supposed to be Oni this close to Shinsai's last hope. Goblins? Creatures corrupted by the taint? Maybe an ogre? But not Oni. That's why the village was used as a staging ground by Ronin to collect goblin heads. The risk was acceptable. Chomai was suddenly thrown to the ground, his back covered in mud, as the mire beneath him exploded. A sound like the meaty slap of punctured flesh, only 100 times louder, accompanied it. The Caillou engineers were walking a rain of small boulders into the attackers. The survivors of his band were caught between the Oni and the artillery, and heavy stones began sheeting in like oversized hail. He saw Okura ripped apart as a stone passed through her, smashing into an Oni on the other side. His Tetsubo had been knocked from his grasp when he was thrown. Crawling over the sodden ground, covered in slime and blood, he hunted desperately for his weapon. Deep in the muck, Chomai strained to keep his head above the murky water. He'd already had the misfortune of seeing another volunteer who who had allowed the corrupted parasites swarming in its water into their nose. He was hard-pressed to think of a worse way to die. Something clapped down hard on one of Chamai's ankles. He felt bones grind and crack as he was hoisted high into the air. The world spun about him, showing Sky, Fetid Swamp, a disinfortification, and it. It had no skin, only cords of bloody muscle and no head. A giant tooth-filled crack split its torso, stretched from where the neck should be down to its navel. As it lowered Chamai into its gaping maw, he caught the barest glimpse of the stone before impact. Tearing a hole through the Oni, blood and chunks of flesh erupted in a cloud. They both fell. Bloody, blinded, and broken, Chamai could hear the fight around him. Something nearby made the ground shake when it moved. Stones from siege engines whistled through the air, smashing into the ground like blows from Bishamon himself. The Oni made their only own unholy noises, and he could hear the screams as the remaining volunteers died. The screams were usually short. Usually. "Grandfather," he pleaded, "guide me." "Crawl inside," offered the spirit. "What?" "Crawl inside the Oni's carcass. You'll be safe there. The others will ignore you." Chomai stared at the bloody corpse. It was one thing to be covered in gore during honorable combat. There were cleansing rituals for that. But to encase oneself in dead flesh, to hide from the enemy, let alone flesh that was a living embodiment of corruption? His soul would never be clean. "Grandfather, I can't. How could you even?" "You're already unclean and dishonored. Would you rather die like this, or live to seek redemption?"
"Dishonored?"
"You've allowed your fellow warriors to die, and failed in your efforts to raise the family status. You have no time for quibbling, boy. Get inside and hide." Heeding his grandfather's spirit, Chamai crawled towards the body. It was still twitching as he began to slide inside the hole ripped open by the siege engine. Blood and viscera clung to him as Chamai forced himself inside the corpse. As he pulled his head in, the sounds outside were muffled. His world became wet and dark. Scared and ashamed, he waited. It wasn't long before he felt something move. Something was inside the dead Oni with him, and more than one.
"Grandfather!"
he cried out.
"Grandfather!"
As things began to bite him, he heard a new voice.
"3 years! 3 years!"
it howled, as things continued to feast on Chomai inside the wet darkness of the dead Oni. The voice grew to a feverish cackle, then receded into the distance.
At completion of the story, Togashi-jun stands up and walks down the dark hallway and stands before the last single drop of light. He blows it out and is plunged into darkness. A few seconds later, all 100 candles erupt into a blue flame before disappearing once again. But there's still light from the mirror, glowing blue.
Look over to the mirror.
You can see your own face, but it's starting to change, to age, and morph. The glow goes to the edges, and the visage, the mangled version of yourself, starts to pierce through the mirror, climbing out to see you and stand before you. The tattoos are all moving as if completely alive.
And you too shall see your death here.
You said I shall see my death. You did not say I shall meet my death. There is a difference. For now, I see my death. Now you may go, for you have shown me what you wish to show me. And yes, Togashi Jun is being prepared to defend himself.
Go ahead and roll a theology fire. And you are set at your composure level.
Okay. So you said theology fire?
Yes.
Let's keep around.
TN2.
I have an advantage.
What would you like to do with that one advantage?
I'm gonna remove the what's it called, strife. So I'm no longer at my composure.
So you're unsure as to what this thing is. It reaches its hand out towards you to attempt to grasp at you. What do you do?
As it's trying to grasp at me, I'm going to take a step back, go into a defensive stance, and if need be, use Earthen Fist.
It's slowly walking towards you, shambling. The tattoos on its body shifting and making the hand go from an ashen color to be black. He steps ever closer and reaches the hand, almost touching your chest.
So, he is standing on the ground, correct?
Yes.
As I'm standing there, lift up my right foot and bring it down sharply on the ground. And as I do so, I'm going to do some support action. So TN2 martial arts, unarmed. And this would be, I'd be an earth stance to do this. Oh, that's much better. I need successes, so keep that one. Yeah, I'm going to be strifing out here. I'm going to... Yeah, I'll keep that. So I have 4 successes, 4 strife.
So narrate how this goes.
As I stamp down, I put my key into the earth to start rippling. And it is now nearby, and he's hurtled to the ground, giving me the chance to take 3 steps back.
The shrine itself shakes, and the body, the ashen body of you, falls to the ground and bursts into dust. A statue of Nue topples, cracking you in the back of the head. And you black out onto the floor. Morning comes, and the storm has passed. You see a pile of ash in front of you when you wake up. And inside that pile of ash, you find a medallion. It is made from cinnabar. And has jagged, oddly shaped points to it that might be described as looking like fire.
I look at it, and then using Togashi's insight. I'll use Togashi's insight to get an idea if this is a good or a bad thing.
And the answer, because it is Togashi, will be somewhat cryptic.
Yes. I said meditation. Meditation's that. What is that? It looks like I have two advantages.
All right.
So I did not succeed.
Would you like to use a void point to reroll?
Yes, I will use my void point to reroll. And I will reroll everything. Did I recover any strife for being asleep?
Yes.
Okay. So I will keep those two. So that will be two exploiting successes that go into two successes, two strife, and an opportunity. So if succeed, you receive a brief vision or hear the voice of Togashi providing a hint regarding one way you might proceed. This hint should not be the full answer, but it should help you move forward towards a solution or at least formulate a plan of action. And the insight I'm going for is based on this medallion.
You see 5 points of light, 2 of them shining brighter than the others, and they spiral into one spot.
Interesting. As usual, Lord Togashi is very cryptic on what he wishes. I will grab some cloth, pick up the medallion, wrap it in the cloth, and put it in a pouch. I will have to speak with my brothers later. Then I will go back out to see where the maidens are.
As you walk...
Actually, before I do go fully out, I pick up the statue of Nimue to put it back up on his pedestal.
There's a little bit of blood on some of the claws of the tiger part of Nimue. Your blood.
Of course.
And you notice a lot of soot marking the statue. You place it up, and as you walk down the hallway, the walls are coated in soot. As you get to the room where you started, it is but a burnt husk. Nothing smoking. Nothing's even all that warm. You see the bodies of the two maidens are but charcoal.
This is not good. I will say a small prayer to Yue about her maidens.
You recall a half day's hike away is a village.
So, I will head over to the village.
There you meet up with a merchant in town.
Did you find a place to stay the night? Sorry we could not put you up, but we do not permit outsiders here to stay the night.
It is okay. I found a shrine to Nimue.
He looks pale.
You stayed there?
Yes.
But how are you not soaking wet? The place was burnt down months ago.
It was not burned when I got there. The Kami provide what they wish to provide. Niue last night decided that I needed a place to stay. And it was her shrine, so she provided. I do not question the Kami. Okay. So inside his head, he's like, what the heck? Must find out more about what went on here.
The other monk, the blue monk, he burnt it to the ground.
A blue monk. Tell me more about this blue monk.
He came following the river from the Dragonfly lands to here in Unicorn. He had several children with him and had a following of other, presumably monks. They went to stay at the shrine, and it was a terrible storm. Lightning struck it and it burnt down. He said the maidens died in the fire and he left. All but I believe, I thought he had 4 children with him, but when he left he only had 3.
I see. Did he give a name?
I believe his name was Fudo. He didn't identify as any particular family.
If he was a monk, technically we are outside of the celestial order for families, though some of us still do say where we're from. For the Togashi is actually an order as opposed to a family. So he was a monk of no specific order.
Very interesting, but I need to be getting to work.
Yes, please. I am sorry for taking so much of your time.
Yes, have safe travels, monk.
I will, and thank you. May your harvests be ever plentiful. May your family be ever joyous. May the Kami always bless you and make your life prosperous. And on that, Togashi Jun turns from him to start on his next travel. Hita the Lost and Chomai the Lost were written by Damien Falato. Tomihiro was written by Corin Lockhart. More of their work can be found at lockhartseriesfiction.wordpress.com.
More of Brittany Thorson's work can be found at Brynhilda on Instagram and Twitter.
Splinters of Jade is a work of fiction and is not affiliated with Fantasy Flight Games or Asmodee International. The music is used with permission from Darren Curtis. More of his music can be found on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, or his website, DarrenCurtisMusic.com. Our logo was designed by Nyx and Amelia. More of her art can be found on Etsy. Recording, editing, and sound design is by Brent Thorson. Story is conceived by Chris Garvey. You can follow us on Twitter at SojPodRPG. That's at SojPodRPG. On Facebook, at facebook.com/SojPodRPG and SojPodRPG.podbean.com. You can message us at SojPod@gmail.com. and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/podrpg to get exclusive episodes and extras. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes, Google Play, and your podcast player of choice. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you can't jade strike it, grasp it with Earth.